Sorry, one sec, sec. Okay. Yeah. 2 minutes, mate, yeah? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not ideal, this, is it?
I'll
start a podcast.
I'll tell him. I'll tell him now, thank you. Welcome to another episode. Sorry, that was you know who that was. I've got some news for you, Zach.
Yeah, go on.
You've won.
You were won.
You were my least favourite person of 2024.
Wow. Well, that reminds me, I need to find a place to put this.
Oh! And if you're not watching on YouTube, you will be gutted. Right. We're back.
It's a big neon sign that says, fuck you, Jack.
I like it. Is that a Christmas present? From your son? From your 3-year-old son. Happy New Year, mate. 2025.
Happy New Year, mate. Good to see you. Good to
Great
be seen.
To see you. Great to see you. Great to be back. 2024 was a big year for us personally,
enormous,
but also for salespeople all around the world. Yes, it is. And so here we are in 2025. So we've been thinking you're going to kick us off today, aren't you, Zach, with some good advice, I think, some stellar advice. I don't like you, but you are wise.
Thanks.
Some stellar advice for 2025.
Well, it's more, these are 10 things that I've spotted, right? 10 things, people love a 10 things or 5 things. These are 10 things that I've spotted through a psychological lens within the sales space. And maybe people will find them useful. But I think the best way to do this is, these are only things that I think. So I'm actually going to play them out to you. And I'm happy for you to do what you normally do and disagree with me just for the sake of it.
Okay. It's not a list of 10 things I hate about you, is it?
No, not at all.
Which was based on, do you remember, do you know what Shakespeare play that was based on?
It was based on Othello.
No, Taming of the Shrew, but thanks for coming. 10 things. Hit me, Jack Johnson.
All right, so first one, I'd like to see your thoughts on this. Recognition is the best fuel. Sales teams thrive when their wins are celebrated. And probably the boss that I learned the most from, Luke Dash, the great Luke Dash of ISMS, he used to say, everyone works better with a pat on the back. So any opportunity you've got to just pat someone on the back, even if the results weren't there, just to say, but the pursuit of the goal was still really good. Any opportunity to pat someone on the back. So what do you think about that? Do you agree with me or disagree?
No, I think praise where praise is due. I think there's definitely... You could fall into this awful habit of like using it as a tool. So I think it has to become authentic, and I think it's got to be real. I've been thinking about 2025. I said to you this morning, I want to buy a foghorn. And every time there's a win, we just do this foghorn. I don't know logistically if that will be a nightmare for the office and for the neighbours. But I definitely want to celebrate the wins within our sales team more. So I agree with that. What I like is I like the element of surprise with those wins. Mm-hmm. So like when you picked up on something, maybe you hold it for a moment before shouting about it straight away, or you bring it up in conversation, or you save it for like the Monday morning meeting or whatever it is. But I think like you don't want to be too repetitive. Here's a win. Here's how we celebrate it. I like disrupting the pattern.
Yeah, exactly. And I think throughout the sales process, there's many opportunities to give someone the praise. There might be the booking of the meeting. There might be the getting the messaging right. There might be the handling the objection you've never been able to handle before. There's lots of different ways that you can praise and reinforce someone. And then throughout the process, then there's always something to improve on, but then be seen for by the people that matter to you or that you're trying to impress. So... yeah, I've spotted that's a big one. Okay, this one's a controversial one. Okay, you bracing yourself?
Spicy, yeah.
Right, autonomy unlocks potential. Micromanagement kills creativity. When salespeople are given the freedom to test, fail, improve, they find ingenious ways to deliver results. Agree or disagree?
Well, the beauty with all of these things that you're saying, there is a counter for everything. And because
And that's what I'm here for.
And because of my negative bias, I automatically go, if you give people too much creativity and freedom, what happens if they fuck it up? Well, there's a lesson to be learned. I'm definitely in the camp of like one thing that I've learned over time of managing people is I used to confuse micromanaging and managing. And I think like micromanaging is just like being all over it, but actually managing and helping people through the process. There are going to be some people that need their hand holding just to get kind of off, like you're helping the boat go out to sea. But when it's at sea, maybe it floats. Mm-hmm. But I think I've always thought that if I'm holding someone's hand, I'm micromanaging. That's not the case. So I think it's about working, finding out what works for different people and then adapting to that individual.
Yes, I agree. What I've seen and what I've been thinking about is I'm now of an age where I'm from a different generation of salespeople.
You're old.
And my first, sorry?
Yeah, I said you're older than most.
My first sales job, and I think actually probably my entire career, was here's a laptop, here's a phone, go and make something happen. And actually, you know, like when people are coming and saying, can you help me with a sales strategy? Or when clients come to us, I'm almost leaning on, well, how would I have thought about this when I was 23? Which is probably a strange thing to admit, but that's it. Like when I had to be creative, it was just, you've got to get me in front of this top 10 list of clients. How would you do it? Being put into those scenarios where you've got to kind of find your way, you learn so much.
I agree, but then let me disagree with you, because I also think
what was the first bit?
Don't worry about it. I also think that you've always thought like that, but then lo and behold, look where you've ended up. You're a business owner, you're an entrepreneur because of that thinking outside the box. I think within a lot of organizations, there are employees that might not necessarily have that ability or haven't been taught or had the freedom to find that out. I feel that so many people will just rely on, okay, it's probably above my pay grade to figure it out and find it. So they won't go and use that creativity. So it's a case of, okay, if they're going to be the rules, Zach, I agree with you, but you've got to make sure that everybody knows that we're singing from the same hymn sheet.
All right. I'll raise you then. Okay. In our business, Louis Patterson, he was given two big accounts, one for electric mm-hmm. vehicle charging, one for PPE. And the client just said, here's a dream list of people I want to work with. One was a big list of like football clubs and stuff. And the other was a list of household names, Wix and people like that. Just get us in with those. Know who's the right person. Mm. Know what a good meeting looks like. Know what a good converting meeting looks like. Just go and make that happen. So it feels like what you're saying is some people can do it.
Well, if you gave that mission to us, we have a meeting.
Right.
if you gave that to 100 salespeople, what would happen? That's an experiment that I want to see Mr. Beast do in 2025.
Thanks. Mr. Beast will put his Instagram handle in the bio. Yeah. Okay. Next one. Motivation is personal. No two salespeople are the same. Some crave the buzz of competition. Others want career progression, and some are driven by financial incentives. Tailoring targets to motivations makes the magic happen. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I think that's a fat thumbs up from me. Very easy to say. What is your motivation? If somebody comes in and says my motivation is money, probably going to question them, because money isn't actually, it's not a motivation. Why are you motivated by money? Go a bit deeper. What is the genuine motivation? And I think we find more, it's about belonging, purpose and community more than money. It's always status. So you get a thumbs up from me on that.
I've just finished my one-to-ones for the year in Bournemouth, just to wrap up the year and look ahead to this year, what we want to happen. And I think every single person said, I want everyone to progress. Whereas a sign of probably when the culture wasn't amazing was, I want to progress.
Mm.
Whereas now it's become more about, like, I want the team to win, because if the team win, then we all win.
Yeah.
So just seeing that is a really nice motivation. And that becomes then quite intrinsic, because you're not just relying on yourself and anything like that. Like, oh, I want to go to Dubai.
You know, think about it. When did you become the most motivated you've ever been in your life?
When you used to come around and tell me he's got a tattoo on my neck.
Yeah. I said you look sick with a big butterfly and you're going to get one. But when you had children. Because when you realize it's not about you anymore and it's not about self and it's about others, that's when the magic starts to happen. So if you want to be a good salesperson, go and get someone pregnant. If you don't want to get someone pregnant, think about your team.
Exactly. Great advice. Thank you. Belief in the product is non-negotiable. A salesperson who doesn't believe in what they're selling will never truly excel. Enthusiasm is contagious. It builds trust with buyers and drives results. People sell best when they believe in the product, leader, business that they are selling for. Do you agree or disagree?
I disagree, but a lot of it, 90% of it, I do agree with, but only because we had a there podcast this morning. No. You say the product, and I want to change the word product to the outcome. We were talking about this morning with Mark Hunter. Belief in the outcome, the transformation, the story, the sizzle. Not, you're saying believe in the sausage. It doesn't matter about the sausage. I believe in the sizzle. Is that fair?
That's good. Maybe I'm, yeah. And actually, I think we are saying the same thing, because probably what I mean is, do I believe this product could help people? Well, the best clients we've had. And even in my career, the best businesses that I worked in, when I thought, oh, not only can I sell this, I actually believe that it will make a difference. So there's no weird part of me that gets through the sales process and thinks, I don't know if I'd buy this.
Yeah.
Those early beliefs carry a lot of weight. You feel like you want to get over this one pretty quick. But
no, I agreed with you, but nah,
you just kept shutting me off and saying nice like that. Right, next one. Failure is a learning tool. Salespeople that view failure as a stepping stone to improvement rather than a sign of personal inadequacy become more skilled. Holding up the mirror and then upskilling is how you evolve.
There is. I could very easily disagree with you, but I am going to agree with you on this.
What is to disagree on that?
Well, it's an argument for another day, but like everything in life, there is an ulterior to kind of perspective. No, I agree with you. I think failure is key. We've had our best moments in business where we failed and we've learnt. But I also think that if you can foresee the failure and get there before the failure actually does any damage, that's a powerful. So like the pre-mortem we talk about. So if you look at your 2025, why would I fail this year? Well, I don't do enough input. Okay, well, I'm going to make sure, I'm going to have a bet with somebody that if I don't do $100 a day, I'm going to give them a grand, whatever. Like I saw that on LinkedIn the other day, but like the pre-mortem. So you could probably get rid of some of the very easy failures that you probably know, unless you get to the end of the year and go, oh, I failed to hit my target. I learned from it. Next year, I need to do more input, or get there first. So like failure's great, but can you predict the failure before you get to the failure?
There's two kinds of leader that you can work for, I think. Adaptive and reactive. Mm. Reactive is the one you don't want to work for. Reactive is the one that goes, oh my fucking God, have we just missed target again? Slams around on the desk and just starts bollocking everyone. Adaptive is the one that spots like iceberg ahead.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to correct the course of the ship here. And actually, no one notices. Mm. They notice, but not in that funny, like emotional way. They're just like, oh, we're actually just going to correct the course here and just steer this way a bit, or we're going to up the output there a little bit, or I'm going to go to this event and talk. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to pick up the phone for you, whatever it may be. Those ones that can adapt and change and acclimatize to it are the ones that tend to do well.
Mm. So is that one agreed, four disagreed?
I think so. Right. Now, the next one is how people buy. So it'd be interesting as teach a lot of this stuff together. what you think about these ones. All right. I've spotted this year, or rather last year, and then moving into this year, I think this will be even more important. People value what they build. Buyers assign more value to products they've contributed to. All our best meetings and clients that see return on investment have some form of, if you could build this yourself, what would it look like?
Yeah, and I think the lesson we've learned, I think we were talking about it before we found our man Mo Gordat, but the happiness equation of expectations meets reality equals happiness. We're a big believer of, you build it, you set the expectations, I'll manage it, I'll tell you whether it can, that IKEA bookshelf can actually have a bouquet of flowers or a vase with water on, and I'll manage those expectations. We'll build it together, we'll work on that, and we'll move forward. So yeah, I think IKEA has been a buzzword of 2024 in our office,
it's
hasn't it?
It's been big, and people are nailing, you know, Freya Bailey in my office is someone who's made this like, I think, part of almost every call that she does, and it just works so well. I've also spotted, this is where like I always think where have we learned? Where have we changed? The last few deals of 2024, I've been asking people, rather than dictating like, here's how long we work together, here's what our terms are, and here's what you can expect by like day one and whatever else, saying to people, how long do you think is enough time to test this? And people are surprising you because they're like, maybe let's try it for a year. But if I told them what the normal terms are of like 4 months, well, that wouldn't have worked. Or asking people like, what are your expectations for the first quarter? Rather than just saying to people, what do you expect in the first few weeks? Yeah. And it just creates like we've built something that lives in quite a realistic place. So even stuff like this, we're adapting to and learning as we go. Ready for the next one?
Please.
Expectations shape reality. Set clear expectations and deliver results with reality in mind. Overpromising leads to disappointment, even if you deliver well. Stop selling at perfect. We exist in comparison.
4.7.
Oh, on Amazon.
Yeah. Nobody wants a 5-star. Nobody's perfect. We're all ugly. We're all flawed human beings. Get into it. We're singing from the same hymn sheet.
I was going to ask if you've been measuring my penis then.
About what? Have you got another one on that list, mate?
Yeah, we both agree with that one. Nice and easy. Expectations equal reality. All right. Emotion drives decision. Buyers may claim to make logical choices, but emotions drive the final decision. Whether it's aspiration, fear or pride, successful selling taps into how people want to feel, not just what they want to buy.
Yeah. I always think about that, like the logic and the credibility that comes in at a later date. But the emotion is the driver. And if the logic, emotion will be the driver. And if the logic doesn't add up, okay, then that's where the buyer's remorse typically comes in, when you've been impulsive, you've done something on a whim. But yeah, emotion. And that's why we ask people deep questions. If we get people to a place of deep thought, they'll attach an emotion to it, and then they're more likely to make a decision. So it's a thumbs up from me, Zach Thompson.
Well, we're doing well on this one. We weren't doing well on the managing of sales teams, but we are doing well on the how to sell. So yes. Fine, good. Coaching beyond the meeting. Coaching teams not only secure the meeting, but also confidently close deals into ROI is the difference between average and exceptional performance. Equally, knowing when to walk away from an unviable deal saves time and builds credibility. This year, our best performing campaigns have seen us coach founders and sales teams on how to close deals, not just how to book meetings.
Meetings is a metric, isn't it, to revenue? So it's just like everything, they're all metrics. It's just 0 to 1. So 1 is cash in the bank, signed agreement, contract, done deal. 0 is starting that. And all the way along, you're just looking at dials, connections, conversations, MQL, SQL, appointment, discovery, proposal, whatever it is. It's all just, can I get there? So like, focus on the good stuff. You do the right things all in the front end. You may have less meetings, but you're driving yourself towards the revenue.
This reminds me of Joe Stallion of Solvi Digital. Mm-hmm. He was a coaching client for yours first, Joe, and he wanted to get to a point where he was booking his own meetings and then closing his own deals. And actually, he set his business up in a way that isn't suited to ego. It's suited to marketing services. Where would they be the most valuable? Mm-hmm. If you think of this from like AI is this big buzzword, right? But AI, people are trying to sell it into like, who are the most like technologically advanced businesses? I've got this AI tool. I'm going to try and sell it to Google. But really what you want to do is, how can I sell this to the businesses that need it the most? The 50-year-old family run businesses that are in the like industrial space or whatever it may be. The ones that actually probably need it are the least educated and would see the most value.
Exactly. He's a smart man. And Joe Stallion, if you're listening, respect.
Respect. How many deals has he closed?
Too many to count. Too many for fingers I've got.
Riddled with it. Last two. Simplicity is everything. Buyers are overwhelmed by complexity. Simplify your message, your offer, and your sales process. When the path is clear, decisions come quickly and confidently.
Love it. I always think about my favorite bias is the negativity bias. And I just think that everything is, yeah, what do you mean by that? Everything's being deconstructed to assume the worst. So the more you give me, the more there is to deconstruct. The less you give me, the more simple it is. It's easier for me to comprehend. It's honest. It's upfront. Yeah. Big time. Big time.
Big time. Right. Last one. You ready?
I'm here.
Right. Don't force a booking. So I'm going to give you a real stat here that we found. So we found our conversion rate on a well-qualified callback is 1 in 3 callbacks become a meeting with around a 90% attendance. So playing the attendance game on a callback is much better than trying to just book the meeting on the first call. You know, someone's kind of umming and ahhing. This is something that I'm looking at in a few months' time. And then rather than going, oh, well, let's just book it in now and see how you feel, whatever it may be, it's better to say, well, let me just call you back when you are in the market. Or I'm on a holiday, I might be at my diary, like, just try me on. Let's just get it. We'll do it when I call back.
Yeah, I agree. There's no harm in diarizing those next steps, having concrete next steps with that person, setting yourself up with some kind of upfront contract. Well, I'll ring you back once we have that conversation. If you don't feel like it's a fit, are you happy to say no? And if you do feel like it's a fit, would you be happy to arrange a time to sit down further? Yeah, of course. Then you know what you're running into and you're playing the same game. People expect, especially in sales, people expect their prospects to play the game, but they break the rules, but you've not even set the table.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. So there they are. I think we agreed on some, not some, all.
Not all.
Should we give a little task to start the year off?
Give a little task. It's 2025. Lots of stuff is happening. The Sales Stoic, another podcast, is out now on all platforms. Or just search The Sales Stoic. Search Jack Thompson or Zach Frimpson. Give us the task this week, Zach Thompson.
Well, wow, that really threw me then. You did that so confidently as well.
Sorry.
Right, the task this week is to post a picture of me or Jack on as a LinkedIn post and put, this is my 2025 New Year's resolution. If you do that and tag Owen Richards marketing in the comments, we will, let me say, start of the year, we're doing well, £500 to the first person.
Double it. You've got a grand.
Wow. Okay, right. You've got a grand. The first person who does it gets a grand, but you've got to be the first person to do it and post it to get there. We're only doing it once, so get there first.
Happy prospecting.
Cheers, guys.